Namo tassa, bhagavato, arahato, Namo tassa, bhagavato, arahato, Namo tassa, bhagavato, arahato, So, of course, we're talking about Chen Reizi, and hopefully this weekend we can talk about his legs. Because we should have done the forearms, but of course I'm going to review them. You know what the forearms are holding? What are they holding? What's this one holding?
Manala.
What's this one holding?
Love.
And what are these ones holding?
A jewel.
At the heart, not up there. Yeah. So it's really curved. So these represent knowing, these represent being. What does this hand represent? Manala.
Loving kindness.
Why?
Because that's the thread that holds all our lives together.
Not the lives, yes. Yes, but not quite. Every moment of consciousness, there is a change of the causes and the conditions. The inner causes and the outer conditions. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Like when you said that was one mind state?
Yes.
And then when I said not quite, then there's another mind state. But even before that, when you're saying it, there's little moments where you feel this way and then you feel that way.
Yeah.
Is it true?
Yeah.
And there is this continuum of what they call mental formations. Continuum of them. Now, depending on which school you're studying with or whether anybody wants to get into it or not, there's anywhere from 300 odd to 50 mental concomitants. Anywhere from that. So the beads just represent a vast number, infinitely. It's usually in a figure eight, isn't it? Infinitely, every moment, when you're talking about the Panama, there's one mind state. When you're talking about the cats, it's a different mind state. When you're talking about whether or not you should have done something different today, it's a different mind state, isn't it? Every one of them. And we don't see one mind state dissolve and the next mind state come into being, do we?
No.
It just feels like oneself. But guess what? Each of them comes up and it has a whole past and future in itself. It comes up with a complete history. So it feels like I have always been this way. I never throw my banana skin in the sink.
Yeah.
Right? And then another moment comes and, oh yes, I did throw my banana skin in the sink. And then another moment comes and it's like, well, the sink is a good place for banana skins. And then another moment comes and says, of course it's disgusting to throw banana skins in the sink. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Like they all just, and each one feels like the same eye to the operator.
It's like the filing cabinet full of these files and you're the drawer.
Yeah, or the fingers going through them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And each one of them has a past and a future, which is why I love using that little book. Where is it? There it is. Where you have a theme, banana skins, and then there's one moment and there's, oh yeah, candle. You know, and I have past and future, oh yeah, I know that. I remember when I got that candle, it was like, a slight shift, oh no, I did throw it in. Oh yeah, my house is really, you know, I can throw this banana skin wherever I want to, my house. Now it's not candle anymore, now it's house. And then the next moment comes, and then there's a gift. And then the next moment comes, and then there's icicles. And the next moment comes. See, so there's a theme that goes. But each conscious moment is actually different, separate from the other.
Mm.
You can see it especially with emotion when you see anger, when you don't like something, and even if there's a suggestion of it, immediately the mind just goes, no. And then the justifications, and you can watch your mind becoming different selves to make it work your way, can't you? Can't you do that? I find for myself, of course, probably none of you really do anger, but I have been known to on many occasions, And I find for myself that anger is the easiest one to see. Because greed, I'm just too intent on winning. And I don't like anger as much. So I'm a little distant from it a bit. Does that make sense to you? I don't know.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So the distancing is...
This is amazing. If you aren't willing to see how you're trying to distance yourself with anger.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're willing to see that and you turn that clarity to say, oh, this is anger, not I am angry at that. Because anger really picks a point, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It just goes exactly, how come you put that banana skin in the sink? Like frozen on the banana skin in the sink. You don't see the whole rest of the kitchen, do you?
No.
It disappears, doesn't it? So when you realize that it's anger and you realize how good the focus is, oh, maybe I'll switch the focus. She does. The pictures, the hangings in this room are so beautiful. You're still focusing. You're using the anger, but you're using it for focus. Mm-hmm. On what you prefer to feel. Mm-hmm. So anger is more alert, but greed is kind of like a little bit. Isn't it? When you got everything you like, you don't think quite so much, you just keep wanting going on it, don't you? When you're happy with something, don't you just want it to keep coming?
It's very tranquil. Yeah. Like watching TV.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. Except it can make you not see.
Yes, yes, sir.
You know, in my case, the truck coming. So intent on running across the street, I didn't look for a truck. And how somehow to combine those two, it would be ideal, wouldn't it? When you have that focus of the hatred and that openness of the greed, you know, that openness of the happiness of liking what you've got. But that takes some recognition of those states. And you can't do the recognition if you don't like yourself. Can you?
Why?
Because if you don't like yourself, you're not going to be honest. And it requires honesty.
Admitting you're in that state.
It requires honesty to say, oh, this is anger.
Yes, exactly.
Not, it was their fault. Well, I'm choosing anger here. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Yeah. When you're actually honest, when you're not afraid of being honest, you're not trying to appease or change or anything, you're willing to open yourself to be nude in the moment, to dance in the moment with nothing to hide and with nothing to defend.
Just acknowledgement.
You acknowledge.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
Nobody else. No,
but just
matter.
You acknowledging.
You acknowledge, oh yeah, this is how I feel. Oh, this. Does that make sense?
Perfect.
I don't know.
I always thought it was kind of like the other way around. You had to be honest before you could. Or you had to like yourself before you could be honest.
Honesty is stopped by not liking ourselves, by thinking we should be different. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And you cannot practice kindness unless you can be kind to yourself. Because you're not actually practicing kindness, you're trying to just make everything. There. There's no kindness in your heart, there's anxiety. That's not kindness. Is it?
That's that appeasing.
Yeah. So how to put the focus on practicing kindness means you have to start focusing not on what the mind state is so much, but what your motive is from mind state to mind state. Not the beads, but the thread. You have to wish to be kind in every moment, starting with yourself. That's big. That's huge.
So it's not like you change the motive one moment and then that changes the actions resulting from that motive slightly. It's not that the action, all of a sudden you're saving the world or helping every homeless person or anything, but there's just like a...
This kindness from moment to moment. As soon as you practice kindness to yourself, it automatically starts spreading. When you get up in the morning and it looks like an ugly day, it automatically, everything looks ugly, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the people, whenever anybody says something, they're a bitch, aren't they? Yeah, it's your view you have to change. And you don't do that by lying, do you? Because you know.
Yeah.
Because you know. So loving kindness is a thread. The beads, all the beads of different mind states is strewn on in Shinrezi's hand. Now this took a lot of practice by him. Because you start loving kindness and then you screw up. And the thread is actually made of a bunch of little pieces too, all sort of woven together, isn't it? So like the loving kindness might be there, but there might be 20 other aspirations coming in too. Oh, I really want to give them everything as long as I get mine first. And which one of those is loving kindness? It's hard to say. And compassion is what the other hand is holding. Why? Because unless you have had the experience of suffering and known its impermanence, whenever you see suffering, you're going to think it's their fault. Do you know people who do that? Mm-hmm. Do you know people when you're suffering,
karma?
They say that's your karma?
Yeah.
Well, you deserve it. Well, you must have done something that... Mm-hmm. Rather than looking at the really incredible truth of this thing called impermanence. Wherever there's a meeting, there's a parting. Wherever there is a building, there will be a ruin. Isn't that true? Anybody know anything different than that, that they can think of? Impermanence is everything. How old are you? Can you remember 10 years ago? No. How about 15? Well, wait a minute now, okay. That would be like, what year is it now? Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, that would be, 20 years, okay. That would be 1994. No, 92. Let's see, so I would have been,
what was the best?
And where, when did...
We did with the last century, that's really tough.
Yeah, exactly. But to actually look at impermanence and realizing when you're in the mud, you know it's not going to last, don't you? You can hate being in the mud. Do you remember this?
Yes.
You all remember that? Were you here for that?
I don't think so.
Oh, good.
Uh-oh.
Here. We can all do it. I want you to show us your... Okay. So now, pinch this arm really, really, really hard and look at it and dislike it. Really feel where the worst pain is and really focus on it. Really focus. Pinch harder. Great. Okay, shake. That was nice. Okay, now, pinch this arm really, really, really hard. And look at the colors in that orchid. What kind, how many spots are there on the inside? really pinch hard. And what is the green like on the leaves? Okay, Nicole. Mm. Which hurt the most? Mm.
The one, the first one.
Why?
Because we were totally focused on it.
Because you were disliking it. Because you were disliking it. Why didn't the second one hurt as much? Because your mind was neutral. You could still feel it, couldn't you, when you were pinching? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to block it out. You're not trying to change it. But when you know it's not personal, when you hold your mind on neutral, the suffering is way less. Isn't that beautiful?
It's beautiful.
So compassion is when you know that suffering is impermanent, that's the mud, then the lotus flower grows out of that. Then whenever you see any suffering in yourself or others, you know that it's impermanent and you put your mind in the neutral. So you can actually listen to people, which is sometimes the most important thing to do when someone is suffering, isn't it? To just be heard. Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. That's what he's saying. Loving kindness, compassion. Those are states of knowing. Those are states of how to operate in the world. Those are the states that create the ethical foundation that allow one to achieve some type of understanding. Without a good moral base, you can't do fuck all. You have to stop self-hatred. You have to stop it. Because it's so boring. It's so boring, my dear, really. And we're all so much more glorious than that. We're a bunch of damn divas. We should explore what is really possible in our lives, not what isn't. Those are relative truth. What are these two hands holding the jewel at the heart?
Sympathetic joy.
Sympathetic joy and equanimity. These are states of being. Have any of you ever enjoyed a child? Any of you? Could I see a show of hands on that one? Enjoyed a child? You've never seen a child playing in a playground that you just stopped and just watched?
They're okay.
But you never just watched somebody learning how to roller skate or?
Absolutely.
You never have? No kidding.
Oh no, you're zeroing in.
I'm trying to figure out.
No, like, maybe, if I don't know, other people, I do.
Like,
but not specifically children.
No, but any time that you've been children, it's usually easier for most people. But can you remember somebody being successful at something and you're just watching their joy?
With music.
Okay.
People who play music who are...
just right into it and you can feel that sense of joy for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's sympathetic joy. With grandchildren. Right. That's sympathetic joy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Where you watch someone, like a kid, what you're teaching or something, who suddenly gets something.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them open. That's sympathetic joy. And that is a state that naturally arises in all humans. We are empathetic. Maybe we have a narrower focus where we let it come out. So what? There's always reason for that. But that you do let it come out is what's important. So that quality of sympathetic joy is like the jewel of being. Where you open yourself to, eventually you practice it with everything you see, everyone you see. And eventually it becomes all beings are the Buddha. All places are nirvana. All sounds are the divine sound. There's just this joyousness of just this moment. Where your heart is just filled. equanimity, the other state of being. Sympathetic joy is still, you're still, there's still a sense of personalness to it, like of ownership or something. Mm-hmm. Equanimity transcends that. Equanimity is completely and totally whatever, good, bad, out, in, no difference. Just absolutely open, calm, peaceful acceptance. Those are the four arms of Chenrezig. They're quite beautiful, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So now we're all going to read for the four gateways together.
Out loud.
Anybody who... Four Noble. The four gateways.
I don't have that.
You do.
I have the Four Noble Truths.
Oh, you don't have the four gateways? Don
no,
has it.
I think it's the first page you're missing.
I can read off some.
You're missing a page?
Mm-hmm.
You can turn that one over.
It's only one slide.
Okay, you're missing a page of the Four Gateways. Or you've got two Four Noble Truths.
I just have one Four Noble Truths, one without a title.
So that's the page three of the Four Gateways. Does somebody have two pages of the first page? First one? Yeah, there's it right there. Is that,
no, this is the Noble Truths.
That's the
other one you gave me.
Okay, well, somehow or other, how many pages? Somehow or other, I have screwed up now. There's got to be another one somewhere. Shall we leave it for now and I'll find it in a minute?
Yes.
Pardon?
Yes, sure. We can follow. Can we follow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're reading it out loud.
Yeah. The Dagaba or stupa, there are many different, by the way, many different types of stupas, five or six anyway, but this, I'm just talking about one of them, one of the ones that's found mostly in certain countries, represents manifest transcendence. I can't hear you guys. The Dagaba
or stupa
represents
manifest
transcendence. The awakened body, voice, and mind of the teacher. And the eternal path that has been made clear through his kindness. By walking this path in response to hearing his teaching, we are led into union with him. The symbolism of this structure was described by the Buddha Shakyamuni as showing both the descent of the grace waves of liberation and the joyful ascent to fulfillment. This double flow is imminently present everywhere. The key to unlocking this mystery is the power of awareness. What's the key?
Power of awareness.
When our lives are not seen as a precious opportunity, we wander blindly, driven by hunger for satisfaction. This is often referred to as caught in becoming. The only way to escape from this powerless state is to recognize the four gates that mark entrance to transcendence. We cannot identify these gates until our own experience leads us to realize three truths. These three are as follows. Desire for what is not present is futile. Oh, damn. Desire to be separate from what is present increases suffering. And desire to hold on to present pleasure creates fear. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? No? Yeah, okay. Once this is understood, the feeling of being driven by hope and despair lessens and renunciation dawns. With this new seeing comes an aspiration to know for oneself whether there is a more fulfilling way to live our lives. This aspiration turns the mind towards the four gates. Yearning for something more satisfying than material pleasure
Lessons are unthinking response to the calling of the four demons who ride on our shoulders from the time we are born. These demons represent first avarice and grasping for positions and possessions in the hope of maintaining safety, the demon of hunger. Clinging to the known because of hating to be disturbed, dislike of change, the demon of sleep. Hunger for approval and adoration to ward off fear of rejection, the demon of sex. And obsession with control by wanting to know everything so we can escape the overwhelming fear of meaninglessness, the demon of breath. As long as we experience these insatiable demons as threatening to our happiness, we are caught. When we learn to meet them, they become the four outer gateways, transformed into the attributes of prosperity, peace, seduction, and power. When we reach this point, rather than responding to the demon of hunger by grasping for positions and possessions, we are able to transform it into the power of prosperity, becoming aware of all that is presently supporting and nourishing us in this life. In this way, feelings of pride and avarice open into awareness of beauty and the joy of kindness. When we are caught in anger and irritation, it is because the demon of sleep feeds our wish to drift into habituation without being disturbed by change. Using the power of peace, we are able to let the waves of hatred diminish by remembering the truth of impermanence. This lessens our tendency to cling to the known, allowing the mind to open to calm acceptance of things as they are, transforming the desire for sleep into the power of peacefulness. Thus, feelings of hatred are transformed into awareness of spaciousness and compassion. Addiction to bliss, which is symbolized as the demon of sex, causes us to pursue pleasure regardless of how inappropriate that pursuit may become. When that passion no longer triggers us to become oblivious of others, it becomes a beauty of seduction, turning our longing toward a greater goal and inspiring others to also seek true bliss rather than temporary pleasure. Thus a passage for union with the all-too-fleeting temporal joy is transformed from self-indulgence to the sweetness of sympathetic joy. Fear of obscurity and grasping for dominance and control are the characteristics of the demon of breath. By knowing the art of true power, we can transform the jealousy that arises when this demon has gained ascendancy, thereby turning the mind to dwell in the calm, still point at the center of a whirlpool of unending activity. This stillness, which is always present within the waves and ripples of interbeing, is never caught by grasping for a fixed identity. In this way, jealousy is transformed into equanimity. The work of transforming these demons into the four powers is how one enters and walks through the first level of the path to liberation from suffering. At the second level, these four trainings manifest again, but now they appear as the four guardian yakshas, or wrathful protectors. So I'm just going to pause here. They're guardians because they guard to see whether you've actually learned those four. Mm-hmm. If you haven't learned them, they will turn you back, and it's just going to describe how they do that. When one has learned how to pass these four, access to the third level of realization is granted. The first of these yakshas lives at the base of a great mountain, which is constantly washed by the waves of the ocean. This being is furiously trying to prevent the base from being eroded by waves. What do you think the chances are?
Not very good.
No. The The second yaksha is turning a rosary. Infinitely. I should have said mindlessly there too, but I put infinitely. Infinitely repeating his chant until the stream breaks. And then what happens? What a damn string. I'm just having such a good time. The third yaksha is drunk on his partial achievement of realization, and so he has become distracted from complete understanding because he's very involved in less appropriate activities. In fourth place is a dancing yaksha. Indeed, he is hogging the stage. He offers his dance to entertain the transcendent because he understands there is no such thing as amusement, but he has not yet let go of activity. He's still the self doing something. One who succeeds in passing these guardians then enters the third level. At this stage, the four activities of loving-kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity become universal in their scope. This marks the profound beginning of the Eightfold Path. As one traverses this path, it is understood that samsara is not separate from nirvana, symbolized by the rising energy of the spire, reaching transcendent consciousness. Then the fourth stage, the descent from the crystal to base, recognizing that neither is nirvana separate from samsara, immediately follows. The most secret harvest is thus completed. The body is rainbow energy. The mind is dharmakaya. The four gates are the four limitless elements arising in space. The four levels are the four seasons. The stages of coming into being and passing away, that is time. Here is the holy point where time and space unite. So, Mahalama, bless us. Is that okay? Does it give you a sense of the four, what he's doing? And the learning curve. You see, you don't try to do it perfectly. Because you have to first meet the guardians at the outside, the yakshas that are at the outside of the door to get into the gateway. And then when you think you've got that mastered, then you hit the ones who say, oh yeah, but can you always remember it? On the inside of the door. And it isn't that you always have to act on it, it's that you have to always aspire to act on it. It's the aspiration that counts. The aspiration is what moves us. We can say, I never want to do that again. And then whenever anything reminds us, go into a state of anger, or we can do something and then afterwards look and say, I'm not going to do that again. Which one is more likely to work?
Second one.
Yeah. Where you were just something quiet and you just know, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. It's just very, your heart just says, not worth it. So that's the four. And actually I found a picture of Kobori-san when I was packing. The wonderful thing about packing. Where I put it. That I thought I'd show you. I'm sitting there with a cigarette. There he is teaching in Japan. He's one of the two teachers I mostly studied with when I lived in Japan. See the cigarette in the ash? You see me smoking, you know what it says? You see me smoking. Find out for yourself, how did you come to see me smoking? And you will easily realize that it is your I am the body state of mind that is responsible for this I see you smoking. I over here, separate from you. Go beyond your concepts and ideas. In the silence of desire and thought, the truth is found. Earnestness is the golden key. Anyway, that's Kabori-san. Nice guy. Here's another picture of him laughing while he gets another cigarette out of his, out of his package. These are friends that I knew in Japan. I was there for about a year. A long time ago. 1969. Were you born then? Isn't that a great picture? Mm. I love that one.
It's an interesting contrast to the seriousness of the other three.
In the other two, yeah.
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 The smile is total.
Yeah.
The whole body is smiling.
Mm. Not this one with the two people, just the other one, Kathy. Mm-hmm. So. Laughing while he gets a cigarette, another cigarette out of his mouth. And he chanted the Heart Sutra like a blues singer. I just loved the way. Every Sunday I would go over to the temple just to be, unless I was doing sesshin with the other teacher that I studied with, Uchiyama-san. If I was in, they did sesshin every month. 4 in the morning until 10 at night.
Oh my.
For 4 days. Mm. And one time I was, I left the session early. And then I went a few days later to take Uchiyama some flowers. And he says, I used to be called by the name by my ordained name then, I used to be called Jiva. Jiva Tantra was the name that Rinpoche gave me when he ordained me. And ah, Jiva-san, very good. Jiva, you leave the session early. Oh, Uchiyama-san, my back was very sore. Ah, sore. Jiva-san, everyone's back very sore. That was the last time I left the session. So do you have any questions about the four or this writing or any suggestions about how I can improve it? Make copies if you...
I'd like the coffee.
Yeah, we'll have them tomorrow.
I teach tomorrow evening, but I'll be here Saturday evening.
Okay, we'll have some here. Maybe, do you want a copy of it, Jeff?
Sure.
Maybe you could take one of the copies, because you're not sure you can come tomorrow?
I'll probably come one of the two nights, Friday or Saturday.
Okay, then that's okay. Questions? So now you understand how loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, do you understand why one is knowing and the other is being? Or you get a feel of it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One is how you act in the relative world, this relative truth. And they, as you develop both of them, the state of being in the moment, they feed each other and they become stronger from each other. The more you understand the non-separation, the more easily there is love and compassion and the play of it. And the more you work with love and compassion, love and compassion, the more easily your heart opens to the moment of being so that you understand joy and equanimity. They play into each other. to a point where you get down to the legs. The right leg represents compassion. The left leg represents wisdom. And guess what? They're crossed. They're totally, you can't tell one from the other. They're non-differentiated. Wisdom is not separate from compassion. And compassion is not separate from wisdom. And that's his base. Seated in a state where there is no difference between samsara and nirvana, nor nirvana and samsara. Knowing or being. Samsara is knowing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Separateness. When you realize that that is a mind state, a passing fantasy. Mm-hmm. And that the joyousness of just the energy. How many of the atoms in your body do you still have from the time you were born? That's
two.
Right.
Yes, two. David Suzuki's book, I can't remember the name of it, the one that we were reading when I was on retreat with you last. I bought a copy of it, I can't remember. He does this amazing analysis of how many atoms of a particular molecule or substance we all share with Gandhi.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, every six years, all of the atoms in your body have changed.
Yeah.
Every 6 years.
Yeah.
Who you think you are is continuously changing. There is no constancy in anything. They've gone drifting off and have become something else, and other ones have come drifting in. And there's this continuous flow, this continuous dance. Mm-hmm. Isn't there?
Yeah.
Which self? Because we like to think it's our body we're referring to as me and you, don't we? Don't we? But when you actually say, well, which part of your body is the self? What are you going to pick? If you lose an ear, does that mean you're only partially a self anymore? Not according to you? A finger? A memory? Well, maybe. Anything. It's fascinating, isn't it? It feels like there's this self that's really solid, but when you actually turn around and start questioning it, you realize how many selves you've been just since we've been sitting here. I wish you just wouldn't keep going on about the same thing. Oh, she said something different. Oh, God, I really like her classes. Oh, yeah, she's going on about that now. Oh, no. Isn't that how it happens? I'm not saying necessarily those thoughts, but you understand what I'm saying. That there's a continuous shift, and then there are habits of aspirations to dislike oneself. If I was different, it would. Any of you ever have that aspiration? Can I have a show of hands on that one, please? Oh, some of you are lying. Thank you. All of us, everybody in this room.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
From this, it let's say that arose, that feeling of self-hatred. So is it sort of like if that could be anger and irritation towards yourself? So would you apply compassion towards that? Like, oh look, I see that.
You see it as impermanence. See it as impermanent. Isn't it? Are you always thinking that?
No.
Has a thought come up? Has it then dissolved? Since you see it as impermanent, you can't quite grab it the same way, can you? Can you?
No.
That's the number one way to do it. Yeah. Then you actually start being able to identify mind states as they come. Any meditation on calm abiding, I really prefer the blue flower to watching the breath or anything, because the blue flower is so damn boring. That you're looking at it, and you look at it for a couple of minutes, and then you slowly close your eyes, and you try to see it with your eyes closed, and of course you can't. You leave your eyes closed for a couple of minutes, and your mind wanders all over, and then you open your eyes again, and you try to see it again for a couple of minutes, and then you close your eyes again. And it's so damn boring. That all of the different selves, all the different Cecilies will come forward. And you can actually start watching the mind states. Because you're not doing anything to entertain yourself or distract yourself. So what you do is you just imagine, what I do anyway, is just imagine I have a room full of cushions around me. As when Cecily, who hates herself, comes up, I say, "Oh, right, you sit over here, self-hatred. That's a good place for you. Let's look at this blue flower together." Cecily, who's the best person in the room? Okay. "Oh, Cecily, good. You sit over here. You sit. This is the best seat in the house. You sit in this good place." And then you actually start to be able to identify them as impermanent, as states. When you can do that, they can still come up, just like the pinching. But it doesn't change your focus. And then suddenly you will be involved in calm abiding. If you can't do calm abiding, whenever anything interrupts your bliss, you're going to get pissed off. If you can't watch mind states arise without holding your mind calm, you cannot be ethical. Can you? Something is going to trigger you to do something stupid, like put your fist through a car window or something, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I don't care how much you put ethical reins on yourself. If you're controlling yourself with who I should be versus who I don't want to show myself as, you're creating great harm to yourself. You're not practicing concentration on a neutral logic and allowing the different mind states to come and go, but teaching yourself just to bring your mind back to that calm, neutral object. You are not riding the horse. The horse is riding you. Is that pretty straightforward? When you actually can practice calm abiding, all kinds of stuff from the past just erupts and is gone, cleared, finished. I myself didn't like that idea. What? Go in? I should what? Learn to bet what? Meditate what? Hey, let me read you a poem, sir. Yeah, this one I wrote. Oh, you like this one. Let me entertain you anyway, sir. Want to get high?
It's because we don't want to go into feel those things that need to come out.
Well, you don't want to go in because you hate yourself, because you don't like them. That's why they're stuffed down, isn't it? Does that solve them? No, kindness solves them. How can you be kind if you're not calm? You can't. So you practice with something that teaches you how to just be present, no matter what state comes up, just be present. It's not a matter of doing it right. It's just a matter of doing it. So that's straightforward.
Amen.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Amen. So like all these states of like self-hatred or whatever they are, whatever judgments, you know, I'm better than, I'm worse than, I'm equal to. I have a friend who I went to visit in Ontario. And she said to me, "Oh, I hear you just finished your a year's retreat. How was it?" I said, "Oh, it was fantastic. I learned so much." She said, "Yes, Mom, the 3-year retreat I did was the best thing I ever did in my whole life." What's she doing?
Competition.
She's as good as or better than. Mm-hmm. Does that make her feel better? Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. It puts her on guard, and she's always got to look for more things to be
better than.
And what is the right thing to be better than? What is the wrong thing to try to be better in? Is it continuously having to adjust your wardrobe and stick the dirty laundry in the back?
I thought, when she said that, but she's saying, yeah, it was the best thing I'd ever done. Probably that's the best thing you've ever done.
She went on to tell me about her retreat and why it was so nice to do it. And that everybody should actually do a 3-year retreat because it's okay. Even though it was quite long enough.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
But we don't need to go there, do we?
No.
But it was just like so fast. Mm-hmm. So you know immediately that woman is caught mm-hmm. in trying to be something
mm-hmm. better than. Mm. So that she isn't liking herself. She has that need.
There's some part of her that doesn't accept herself.
Yeah.
Is afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that there's fear involved there.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, as soon as you know that there's fear involved there, you immediately practice kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And kindness depends on how willing the person is to have their ears open, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can plant a seed about, you know, how it must be hard to always try to be the best. Because
mm-hmm.
it is. It is hard work, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you plant a seed on totally agreeing with them, how wonderful that you were able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's going to make them relax more.
Mm-hmm.
But then the compassion comes in
mm-hmm.
with that. So you actually have to see the person. Don't you? It's not ever about right or wrong. It's never about right or wrong. Morality is very straightforward. Morality is allowing you to be open with yourself. That's all it is. So that you have the full strength of your own life to walk the path. That's all that morality is. If you're divided, parts that you're hiding and parts that you're not. You're not going to have the strength, are you?
Mm-hmm.
No. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm. You have to be completely open and allow yourself to see what it is that's inside. It's only really become.
Or who's looking outside from inside. And just say, oh yeah, that's nice. Oh yeah, hello, welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. But not let any of them be the ruler. Kindness or compassion have to be the ruler. Kindness is letting everything be. The mind in a neutral space, right? Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
What was the difference?
Neutral.
Mind in a neutral space. It is enormous power. That's Ratnasambhava. It's called the wisdom of equality. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm.
His symbol is the crown. When you develop the power of Ratnasambhava, you are crowned. You are the ruler.
Mm.
The wisdom of equality.
Mm-hmm.
That's very beautiful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Because you're one with everything.
That's where you reach that state of oneness.
Mm-hmm.
But until you get that, you're not rich enough. I mean, working toward it gets you somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you have to ace that one or anything like that. Because that would be dumb.
You can't become perfect until you're perfect, eh? That's not true.
Oh, is that an adequate sufficiency then for the evening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sufficiency. Any? You're so cute with your words. You must be a poet.
I am. I've written books, you know.
I know that.
Any last questions, answers, comments, complaints? None?
Okay.
You notice this extremely beautiful gold light in your heart. And it's just tingling away there. Just right at the bottom of your rib cage. And of course you don't close your eyes, because if you do, I'll throw my teeth at you. And you just feel the light moving up your spine to your head bone and tingling on the top of your head, down your spine to your legs and tailbone, and tingling down there and down your arms and legs. And it just starts pouring out your pores in every direction, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. It moves out through this room, through this house, through this neighborhood. Phil's Edmonton. Olivia just got a hit. Just feels, I mean, just imagine somebody you want, your parents just got it. Just flows out through all of Alberta and North America, into the space, down and through the earth. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind, it's just temporarily a spot. You think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all we be, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. So thank you for your big compassion.